Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today we're going to be talking about three issues in international education news that crossed our feeds in the last few days. We're going to be taking the time to answer your questions about the three issues that we'll be talking about. But before we get into the mix of this, we want to take a moment to ask for your help in subscribing to our newsletter at smieconsulting.org. We ask that you go to the podcast and newsletter page, and we'll find out more about, we'll be able to share with you more. A lot of the stories that we cover each week in the Midweek Roundup will be available for you.
We'll be able to share with you more in the current days and weeks ahead.
We'll be sharing with you a lot of the content that we've been unearthing over the last few days, and hopefully we'll be sharing these on a more regular basis with you. For those that are new to international education, we have produced the SMIE Consulting e-newsletter for the last year. And we're coming up on the anniversary of that. And it's our opportunity to share with you each week the stories in international education that we find the most valuable for international educators in the United States, but also abroad. We cover a wide range of topics from the United States and beyond, as well as a survey of other countries that and how their international education policies are taking shape. So we invite you to subscribe to that newsletter. Just posted the link to it in our in the comments section on the Facebook page, and certainly encourage you to get connected with us as well on our website. And on smieconsulting.org, you'll find a lot of free resources available for international educators to learn more about what we offer at SMIE Consulting, beyond the roundup here every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and the newsletter. We have a variety of other free resources and our blog articles we've written over the last few years that will help hopefully guide your institutional policies and provide some background on what are some of the best practices in the industry related to student recruitment, especially. So we're going to start first today with stories related to cheating. And this is something that we've seen a lot of stories about recently. In the news, obviously, what we've seen first and foremost are the stories coming out of Operation Varsity Blues, and that certainly has led a lot of folks to comment on this and see and certainly recognize it for what it is. And certainly in the United States, we've and in admission circles, we've certainly seen quite a few interesting stories come out of this over the last year or so. I want to start with two articles related to this topic on Varsity Blues. The first of which is a story in a rather obscure article called International Policy Digest, and it takes it more from a global perspective, not only just focusing on the recent sentencing for Felicity Huffman, one of the high-profile individuals that had paid to have her daughter's test taken, and getting her paying a consultant, college consultant, to get her into her school of choice. That story leads with that, but the focus of the article is called "Doctored Admissions: The U.S. University Admission Scandal as a Global Problem." Does go far beyond that and talks about how corruption is in every part of higher education around the world, and it actually quotes the a Council of Higher Education accreditation, an accrediting body for all accrediting bodies in the United States, CHEA, that noted the ubiquity and diversity of corruption in higher education, including unethical, inappropriate, sometimes illegal practices, with evidence suggesting that in every part of the world, higher education is affected by corruption to some extent. So the article itself goes through a number of examples, which we've covered here on the Midweek Roundup at past editions, one of which was cheating had been happening in Australia, where education has really become what they call in the article an insufferable cash cow. Universities were the ones doing the cheating in a lot of respects by reducing minimum IELTS scores to 4.5 when the recommended score was 7 for a lot of their programs, and then going to the extent of one institution, University of Tasmania, waiving English proficiency standards altogether in July of 2018. So this commission in New South Wales, an independent commission against corruption, released a report in 2015 talking about how universities had been too driven by business and revenue and not over ethical behaviors in their enrollment of students. So it's really a fascinating article, and it talks a lot about the Australia example, but does have a lot of references to other issues around the world or other locations around the world that are also impacted by this. The second article is a New York Times piece on college, on what they call Cheating Inc., and that how writing papers for American college students has become a lucrative profession overseas. Really a fascinating article that focuses on a student in Kenya, a university student in Kenya, who has, in order to help pay her bills and in order to make ends meet where she is as a university student, she's taken to writing papers for a couple of companies that have popped up, and some of many companies that have popped up in the last few years, to write papers for those that are willing to pay. And this has allowed not only for people trying to seek admissions to institutions find original work and then pass it off as their own for admissions purposes, but also for regular essays that might be needed for classroom or course studies that students might be having. So the article goes on to talk about this. It's really a cottage industry in Kenya in particular, where hundreds of students have joined this, joined these companies like Ace My Homework or Essay Shark, that allow, basically as described as, these companies allow people in developing countries to bid on and complete American homework assignments. And it's something that is really fascinating in terms of how the structure of this industry has popped up. This Facebook group for academic writers in Kenya now has over 50,000 members, the SA for Hire industry, they're calling it. Why is she doing it? She, in her best month, this one student that the interview, New York Times interviewed for the story, she earned $320 in her best month. That's more than she's ever made in her life. And that's something that tells you a little bit about why it's, if that's what they're working towards, as that's their best month. Obviously, that goes a lot further in Kenya than perhaps it does in New York City. But certainly, looking at what happens here, this is perhaps the tip of the iceberg. We know of there are services out there that will check essays to see if they're already online. These kind of essay verification services have existed for at least the last 5 years. But these companies that are now popping up, where it's original work produced by someone, obviously not the student itself that's submitting it, but certainly the ones that are writing these articles and getting paid for it, are certainly making potentially an end run. Now, the article goes on to talk about how a major scandal involving contract cheating in Australia caused university officials there to crack down on the practice. It says that, and there's been a similar effort in Britain to contain that or confront that industry, but not in the United States, according to the article. It does say that contract cheating is illegal in 17 states, but punishments tend to be light and rarely enforced. And there are no federal laws in the U.S. that prohibit this, but one of the services that we have in the United States called Turnitin that detects plagiarism And his quote, Bill Lawler, is the Vice President of Product Management for Turnitin, says, because American institutions haven't been whacked over the heads like Australian schools were, it's easier to pretend that it's not happening. So it's certainly the beginning of a larger conversation here. That's where these kinds of students will be even more under scrutiny in the coming weeks and years. So certainly be following this one to see if we get anything like that in the United States, where we find that not only Varsity Blues and the admission scandal that happened, where we know there were essays that were clearly not the students' work submitted, but having that be more of a industry-wide wake-up call that it is actually happening around the United States, around the world, to address issues that exist related to international students, but also anyone seeking admission to university. So let's shift gears now and move on to topic two, which is related to visa delays. Still continuing, we've covered stories over the last 2 weeks about first the Harvard student that was admitted full scholarship, who had gotten a Palestinian refugee from Lebanon, had gotten his visa approved, was coming to start his studies at Harvard, and was initially denied entry and deported, visa revoked, because of social media posts that friends of his that had put online that were anti-American, that student was finally admitted and returned. Well, we've heard also of a group of Arizona State University students that were denied entry and deported. These were returning students in STEM-related fields and some other fields that were returned back to China. Thought was that might have been more of a tit-for-tat in the ongoing political spats and trade war spats between China and the U.S. We don't know. But now we have the case here of Iranian students. A group of around 20, and this is from a local paper in California that focuses on a group of a UC Davis student that was one of at least 20 Iranians that were coming new to the United States and were able to get visas successfully at U.S. consulates and embassies outside of Iran. Obviously, the U.S. doesn't have an embassy in Iran, not since 1979. And these students all had freshly minted visas and were either denied boarding to their flights out of Iran to the United States, or when they were making their connecting flights in other countries, like in Turkey, connecting to the United States, they were told they would not be allowed to board the plane. And this is a direct result of Department of Homeland Security popping up again and canceling visas for students that had already been admitted to their institutions, that had been approved by the U.S. embassies and consulates in the region, and were on their way to begin their studies. So they didn't even get the chance to come to the U.S. and then be turned around and sent back. These were sent back before they even left their countries or even connected on that original flight to the U.S. Why? I'm probably another tit for tat in the trade and the political spats that this administration has decided to get involved with Iran, ratcheting up the tensions there. Students are the pawns, unfortunately, in this game. And it seems very much the case for both the Chinese students we've talked about before and these Iranian students. We know the history here, obviously, with the travel ban that was introduced in January of 2017 that withstood the challenges after a couple modifications through the Supreme Court and been made legal. There, even with those travel bans, there were exceptions carved out for students that they would, and obviously they were able to successfully get visas. It's just that Department of Homeland Security seems to have a bug up their butt regarding admitting students with who have just received valid visas, who've gone through all the hoops and not being able to even enter the country or even come to the United States to go through immigration here. So Homeland Security certainly has a lot to answer for. The kind of reasoning behind why these students were turned away is certainly you're never going to get individual cases answered like that from certainly anybody at DHS. But the article really does go on to talk about how this is really a deeply concerning trend that we're seeing. that we're now seeing these Iranian students being used as a weapon against Iran. But frankly, is it hurting Iran? No, it's making them stronger by strengthening their position, perhaps. So there's really some false steps here the administration has been making on the visa front. And certainly these Iranian students, sad to say, weren't able to make it. We'll see where that goes, and we'll certainly follow that along. And thank you, friends, for joining on the live midweek roundup today, and hopefully you'll find some value in what we're talking about today. The next post related to this further visa delays impacts students from China. We've already heard about returning students from Arizona State. We mentioned earlier that were turned around and sent home and for reasons that we never find out the actual reasons why. But we now see at the University of Michigan, they have 30 international students were unable to enter because of delays in their visa application. So this is actually going back not just to the initial entry, it's actually going back to initial issuance of their visas. So this is a group of primarily Chinese students that have had their visas delayed at the point of origin in China through the embassies and consulates there. There are increasingly larger number of students in this case have gone through their applications were put in administrative processing. We've seen those, the truth of that is that the delays have been happening there, even though the State Department says they're approving more visas now from China than they have in the past, doesn't mean they're getting done quicker, any quicker. So that's certainly a troubling issue here for these new students that were looking forward to beginning their semester at the University of Michigan. They're now having to defer admissions, and obviously the university is going to be happening. Students that are interviewed about this, basically, and a number of these students were students going into engineering fields, so there was likely, again, the tit-for-tat on STEM-related and academic espionage concerns that the administration has spent a lot of time making the case for in the past few months. This administrative processing has led to these expansive checks back in China before they're even issued visas for new students and reissued visas for returning students. The delay is confusing students in China, obviously. One student was quoted as, "I feel confused. I heard about administrative processing. In China, we call it a check because it's a process for checking your background." But the students that are impacted here, the university has certainly gone to bat for these students, but they're sending emails to state departments and just receive template answers because they don't give details about any individual cases. They don't have answers. Just saying that it's a process and it takes time, and unfortunately, that's something that universities that are admitting Chinese students into STEM-related fields may need to be spending more time prepping those students and making sure that they're getting their I-20s as early in the process and applying for visas as early in the process. That 120 days mark that's legally allowed before entry into the United States, they can apply for their visas and be issued a visa. So it'll be interesting to keep track of this one because there's a lot of uncertainty and anxiety, and obviously there's still a strong desire for Chinese students to come to the United States, and we'll cover some stories next week, particularly at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where there's actually, they're maintaining their, they didn't have the precipitous drop that they had insured against, so we'll see where that goes, but certainly keep our eyes on ears open for that one. Finally, we'll shift gears a little bit and go north of the border. And thanks for joining me, Sarah. Hope you're well. Rosanna, hope you're well as well. We're seeing a story, and this one just came out in the Pi News in the last week or so, related to Canada. And we think everything's going well in Canada for international students. And they've had a boom industry there in the last 5 to 10 years of new international students. They've certainly benefited a lot in the last 3 years since the current administration took a very different stance internationally than our neighbors to the north. And we see now Canada has had a lot of growth, but one area where it's having difficulty growing is in Africa. And we see in 2019, the latest figures from Canada Immigration relate that three out of every four African students who applied for a study permit to Canada had their applications rejected. So the number of study permits have been growing since 2013, reaching 39% of the total applications coming into Canada have been from Africa. So around 53% of applications for study permits for bachelor's degree courses are now refused. Coming out for global issues. So it's a little bit concerned. I'm not quite sure on the exact methodology here, but it'd be interesting to see where it seems to be primarily a bachelor's degree issue. But those that are wishing to come to Canada to study English or French do fare slightly better than that 53% global average for bachelor's degree courses being refused. 89% of doctoral applicants are accepted, though, so that's a little bit more encouraging. So for the initial bachelor's degree candidates, it doesn't seem to be as positive situation. So they, of course, government agencies, they'll never admit to biases in any course of evaluation of visa applicants, but the one word coming out of the Immigration Canada folks, IRCC, that all applications from around the world, this is a quote from them, are assessed equally against the same criteria. Visa applications are considered on a case-by-case basis based on the information presented by the applicant. The onus is on the applicant to show that they meet the requirements for a visa. So it's interesting to see. So I think their immigration consultants are saying that maybe this is a way that Canada is a safe place to migrate to, that and they can do that through the International Student Program to as a way to enter the country with what they call the least amount of scrutiny. This may be, can include in people who are trying to get in to Canada for not plan to be students. So there's a, interestingly, consultancy in Ghana we have 98% of students applying for admission get their admission, but only 20% get their visa. And that's a Ghanaian travel consultancy talking about their student applicants going to Canada. So that's interesting. So according to this consultancy, the main reason why student visas are refused are not having social ties in one's home country, not having enough funds, though they may have more than enough to cater for their tuition living expenses, and their intention to study is not clear. So that's one agent's opinion on why Canadian visa applicants are African students looking to go to Canada for study are not getting visas. So overall, in Ghana, 62% of study permit applications were rejected for Canada this year. Nigeria saw 81% of their applicants turned down, third highest rate on the continent after Algeria at 86%, and Cameroon with 82%. So the ones that are least likely to be refused are those that do have government scholarships. So what we call in the United States, that we students have to show that they are serious students with academic intent, and this is the equivalent for Canada is showing that students are actual plan to be students, that these visa applicants are that. So it's interesting to see that some agencies now are nervous to promote in Africa, are nervous to promote Canada as a study destination. There's also, this apparently doesn't extend just to Africa. Nepal and Pakistan also saw over three quarters of their applications rejected, along with 67% of Bangladeshis, and yet not in Japan, 96% were approved. So interesting to watch that and see how that develops in the coming weeks and months. But we do see a lot going on that front, and we'll certainly keep you posted. So as things develop, certainly encourage you all to subscribe to the SMIE Consulting e-newsletter, all the SMIE news fit to share. And the link is in the comments section on the Facebook page for this video chat. Get that on Monday mornings, and three of the stories that we feature each week in the newsletter will be highlighted here during the midweek roundup on Wednesdays. So we hope you can join us, and if you're listening on the podcast, thank you for your subscribing to the podcast, and we always are happy to be a part of your week and being providing you some useful content in your professional world. So for now, it's me signing off, and looking forward to connecting with you next week. Cheers.